inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has a great story. He's been buying beat-up, run-down properties in a really depressed part of Maine. He's been fixing the properties up, making them nice, and he's attracting really good tenants that are really loyal, and it's making his life a lot easier because he's got long-term tenants. He doesn't have many maintenance problems, and he's really got a great business. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Jay Allen.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com/guide.
Jay, welcome to the podcast. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you first got started in real estate?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, I'd like to say thanks for having me on. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and we'll be going forward.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
Sure. So, yeah, no, I was actually working in the defense industry for Bath Ironworks in management, and just reached the point that I realized that's not what I wanted to do. We already had a couple of buildings in Portland, Maine that we'd bought while I was working, and I resigned my position and came to Lewiston, Maine, and started just buying dilapidated, beat up buildings and rehabbing them from top to bottom. And I've been doing that about 3.5 years, and you know, I'm up to a total of about 45 units at this point and doing well.
Now, tell me, the first buildings that you bought, they were closer to where you live, right?
That's correct. Okay. While I was working, I actually bought two buildings in Portland, Maine. And we had some free cash, you know, and didn't want to throw it in the market. And so we bought two buildings there, and I rehabbed them while I was, you know, still had a full-time job.
Okay. And when you decided to quit your job and to go into this full time, the town where you were buying in is about an hour away from where you live, right?
About 45 minutes.
45 minutes. Yeah. Okay. So what made you want to go out there instead of investing closer to home?
Well, that really wasn't an option. The Portland market, you really started to take off right after we bought our first two buildings there. And I mean, at this point, the values of those buildings have about doubled in 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And you just soon realized there was no way that I could do what I wanted to do there. Look, I'm not a young guy, right? I'm 56 and I don't have time to wait for stuff to appreciate, and the cash flow just wasn't there in Portland buying at the rates that were then, which has since then even got worse. So,
So
I started looking around outside of that and I landed in Lewiston and, I have been buying units up here for less than a tenth of what I could buy them for in Portland.
Incredible. Now, Lewiston is an old mill town. So it's kind of a town that was a thriving town at one time. And now what's it like now? Is it kind of depressed up there now?
Well, I mean, it has been, right? I mean, there are lots of shoe factories up in Lewiston and all that. And, you know, those have all sort of gone by the wayside over the years. So, you know, there's a lot of older stock up here. I was drawn here again, quite honestly, you know, by the opportunity to buy buildings I could put sweat equity into.
Okay.
And there's plenty of that. There's no lack of that.
Now, what about when a lot of investors, I feel, and we've talked about this on the show before, where when you go to towns like that are maybe on the outer suburbs of a bigger town where it's maybe not the best economy, a lot of investors go to those towns because the prices are really cheap. And they don't realize it's a different type of tenant you're going to have out there. It's a different type of building you're going to have out there. So did you have any trouble at first going out there with it being a different market from where you were operating in before?
Well, not really any trouble. I mean, I knew what I was getting into, right?
Okay.
These buildings I bought were junk. You know, again, mm-hmm. I go through them from new roofs to new heating systems, new electric, new plumbing, new everything. So I knew what I was buying.
Okay.
And where people really, you get in trouble, right? We're calling them investors. Okay. I'm not really an investor. I'm a landlord. Mm-hmm. And I mean, investors buy buildings. They're very hand off, you know, sort of hands off. And they often times you'll have a property management firm and management firm. And if people are doing that in these towns like Lewiston or in mill towns like this, then they're going to get in trouble real quick mm-hmm. because, right. you know, the buildings themselves are in very poor shape and they need to be totally updated. And if they're not willing to do that, then very shortly they'll realize, you know, they thought there was going to be a whole lot of cash flow because they're buying the building so cheap. But,
right.
but the reality is they're going to be spending all their money, you know, just trying to get it up to, you know, working condition.
Right. So
while paying a property management company, right?
Yeah. So the property management companies in those areas, I think like a lot of investors think, oh, I'll get a property manager and they're going to deal with it. But there's so much hassle that I feel like a lot of property management companies just don't want to deal with it, or they get in over their head and they can't deal with it. Is that kind of what you see out there?
Well, look, I mean, if you've got a landlord, you know, because I've got a small property management company myself, mm-hmm. you know, just because I get calls weekly from people asking me to manage their properties. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I finally decided that I'd do a few. And the real issue, and again, there are good property management companies and bad ones, right? But mm-hmm. it really comes back to the landlord, because if you buy one of these dilapidated buildings, and you know, don't have a gigantic, you know, CapEx budget for the property manager to do that work, well, then you're sunk.
Right.
So, you know, it really doesn't fall back on the property manager. If he calls up and says, you need, you know, new wiring in your building because it's all old knob and tube and, you know, nothing's working right and this and that. And you say, okay, what's that cost? And he says, you know, $35,000. And you aren't expecting that, or you don't have the resources to do that, well, then you're in trouble.
Right, right, sure. Now, the approach that you're taking is you are rehabbing the buildings right after you buy them. So you're updating the electric, you're updating the plumbing. Like, so are the places almost like a brand new building by the time you're done with your rehab?
Well, I mean, I focus first and foremost on all the mechanicals. So I don't just, you know, update the electric. I replace it all.
Okay.
And, you know, usually I bring new panels right into the units, you know, as opposed to having them down in the basement somewhere. You know what I mean? So, and, you know, so it's completely new with the new arc fault breakers and all that stuff now that are mandated by code that cost a fortune. All that stuff is done. So whether the buildings are brand new, I mean, the bones of the buildings need to be decent or else I wouldn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do a fair amount there in terms of the aesthetics, but again, I mean, I'm not restoring, you know, old Victorian buildings to their grandeur from the 30s.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I don't
right.
do that. I mean,
right.
it's done nice and it's safe and everything is, you know, I've got one building, right? It's 3 units. It was a 6-unit building and I turned it into a 3-unit. So they're 5-bedroom apartments with 2 bathrooms. And in that building alone, I've got 23 smoke detectors.
Right? Wow.
So, you know, they're all hardwired and all that. And, you know, if you aren't prepared to do that level of work, then, you know, I would just warn people, you know, to stay where you can buy buildings as an investor.
Jay, hold on for just 1 second. I need to get a quick word in from our sponsor. When we come back, I want to talk to you about how you're screening tenants, because you're doing a really good job of avoiding bad tenants. And I also want to talk to you about some of the numbers on your buildings. So hang on, we will be right back.
Not an offering of securities. Private investments are highly illiquid and risky and are not suitable for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Securities offered to accredited investors through North Capital Private Securities. Member FINRA SIPC.
I want to thank Realty Shares for signing on to be one of the main sponsors of the podcast. I'm super excited to have them on because I love what they're doing. RealtyShares.com is making it super easy and super passive to invest in real estate deals. So if you're not familiar with Realty Shares, it's RealtyShares.com. And basically what you can do is you can log on to their website. You can see all their real estate deals that they're looking to raise money for, and then you can invest fractionally when something looks good for you. All the deals are curated. They've done detailed due diligence that you can read, you can check out, you can look at pictures, you can check out the managers for the deals. If something looks good, you can get started with as little as $5,000. So this is really cool because they've really kind of lowered the bar and you can invest in deals without a large sum of money. So if, say, you want to buy a rental property and you have $20,000, you could take that money and that would be a great down payment for one rental property. But with Realty Shares, you could take that $20,000 and you can invest $5,000 each into four different deals. So you've immediately diversified yourself. And it's also super simple. You're not out there trying to find deals or trying to work things out. With a couple of clicks, you can invest and get your money right to work, making a pretty good return. So check it out. It's RealtyShares.com, RealtyShares.com. And they have a special offer just for our listeners. If you go to RealtyShares.com/rental, you can get $100 towards your first investment. That's RealtyShares.com/rental, RealtyShares.com/rental. All right, let's get right back to the show. Jay, why don't you talk to us about some of the numbers on one of your most recent deals?
Well, I mean, the ones I just got out of there, it's a 5-unit building now. It's all done and all leased up and people have moved in. I bought those 5 units for $40,000.
Okay.
And I probably, we still haven't tallied everything up yet, but I probably put about another 150 into those 5 units. So,
wow,
I've got like 190 in the buildings, and we're doing an appraisal next week, and you know it'll appraise at around 300,000. You based on all my other appraisals, these should be about 60,000 a unit. So I'm in at 190. It's worth about 300.
I think that's an important thing to highlight, that I think a lot of investors would look at the $40,000 building and say, oh, it's $40,000. I'm going to maybe put $5,000 or $10,000 into it. This thing's going to cash flow like crazy. And that's where they get in trouble, because you're putting a lot of money in there so that you're not having a ton of maintenance issues probably with your properties, right?
No, I'm not. It's, yeah. And the whole thing with me is that I need to create sustainable, you know, safe housing. I'm not interested in being a slumlord. I may be in an area where there are a bunch of slumlords, but I'm not one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's why all my units are full all the time and why I've got a waiting list as long as my arm.
Wow.
Because, and it still cash flows.
Yeah. You
know? And so I just made the sort of the decision really early in this is that I would rather be vacant than have a bad tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you get bad tenants is to have bad buildings.
Right. Right.
You know, because if your buildings are only just barely able to survive, the only people that want to live there, right, is a guy with 3 pit bulls and a meth lab in the back room.
Right.
And I don't have any interest in that. You know?
Right. They have no options. And right, you're kind of getting the bottom of the barrel tenants. Now, tell me, in your area, you are renting to a lot of immigrants. And
I am.
And the immigrants probably don't have a credit score. They don't have any rental history that you can check on. How are you screening tenants to make sure that they're going to be good?
Well, you know, the first few that I had, it was just on gut feeling because there is no way to do a background check.
Right.
But very soon after that, really everybody that I have now in my buildings, sort of came to me on a referral basis, And so, I'm not doing a real screening on these people because there's no way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I know their friends and I see them at their friends' apartments, because right. of the last 1,000 days in Lewiston, I've been in Lewiston 950 of them. I'm here every
yeah,
day.
Right.
So I know my tenants well. I bring their kids to school if I'm going by. I help the women carry groceries up the stairs if I happen to be there. I mean, I know my tenants, and that's the key. And again, that's the difference between an investor and a landlord.
Right. Right. Totally. And so you've made a good name for yourself in the town. Everyone knows you. So when their cousin moves here or their brother or their sister, they're going to refer clients to you, right? So that's how you're getting your tenants. It's all kind of word of mouth.
Well, one example is I just had a family that had to move to Kentucky, which someone else in the family was ill and lived in Kentucky, and they were moving there. And they said, "Don't worry, Mr. J, we've got somebody that wants to live in this apartment." And, it was a friend of theirs. And so they moved out on the 4th of July. We went in on the 5th, repainted everything, and the family moved in on the 6th. I didn't advertise. I didn't do anything. And wow. They're nice people, a nice, clean family. And I know they are, right? Because the people that moved were also a great
right.
family.
Right. So, now, yeah. How about finding your crew, finding people that are going to fix the properties up? Do you have a hard time finding good workers out there?
Well, I mean, I'm a very small crew, right? It's me.
Uh-huh.
And now my crew has expanded all the way up to two more guys.
Okay.
So the first guy I found that has been with me almost 3 years was actually on the roofing crew of the first building I bought. And he asked if I had any other part-time work, and he started out for a month or two just doing stuff nights and weekends, and then he just wanted to work for me full-time. And then the second guy, just a friend of a friend, who really has some good skills, and so he brought him on too. I mean, I could use a crew of about 10, but I'm an old man Yankee that's cheap, and I do as much of it myself as I
right.
can, and that's the other thing I got to say, right? I mean, those numbers work really well, right? When I say, look, I've got 190 in this building and it's going to appraise for 300. But look, I don't pay myself.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, this is all about sweat equity. And I mean, it still works great, but I don't want to mislead people.
Right,
I mean,
sure.
So.
Now, how about getting paid? Do the tenants have stable employment? You said they're mostly immigrants. How are they paying you?
Well, most of them, they've got some Section 8 assistance, but the vast majority of my immigrants from Somalia and Djibouti and Yemen and Angola and Congo, and they work as well. Mm-hmm. And, there's a big Walmart distribution center up here in Lewiston, and many of them work there and work full-time jobs. I would say probably 3/4 of the tenants I have, are paying more than half of their rent.
Okay.
So it's not just one, big check from Section 8, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, they pay a large portion of it themselves.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Well, Jay, this is a really, really great story. You've done just an incredible job of building out your portfolio. So where do you see yourself going from here? Are you going to keep this going and keep buying more units?
Well, I mean, knowing myself as poorly as I do, I really can't see myself stopping. I get calls weekly on deals and lately I've been just, turning them all down because I've got 16 units right now under construction, and I just need to focus on that first. That's a building that also I bought it and it came with a $200,000 lead grant. You know, so a lot of that work has been ongoing the last few months. With me not doing the lead work like I've done in the past, this was done by a lead contractor.
Okay.
And but I really need to get that one done and squared away first. I love my wife dearly, and she's going to kill me if I keep, you know, putting myself in a position to work
sure.
7 days a week.
Yeah. You know? It gets addictive, though. It's hard to not do more deals.
Well, you know, real estate isn't really complicated.
No,
it's not. You just can't, it's not a pie in the sky deal. Like you said, with people buying up these old buildings because they're so cheap and think they're going to make money on them. That doesn't work.
Jay, thank you so much for telling your story. And thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. We'll be back with a brand new interview next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.